From VOA, the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. I'm Rick Pantaleo. On today's program, we are going to talk about what's on everyone's mind these days, the coronavirus pandemic that's sweeping the world. But before we get into our topic, because of the coronavirus and the need for social distancing in the United States, our current affairs team at VOA has been asked to telework, that's work from home, more frequently. This may prevent us from providing you with fresh programs like Press Conference USA, Encounter, and Issues in the News on a weekly basis. We will be doing more interviews by phone, and that may reduce the audio quality of our programs. We may also have to run encore programs from time to time. However, we want you to know that despite the difficult days ahead and technical shortcomings, my colleagues Carol Castiel, Kim Lewis, and I will work hard every day to bring you our three news analysis programs to the best of our ability, and we do thank you for your understanding. COVID-19, or coronavirus 2019, is the name of the disease that's caused by a novel or new coronavirus that has never before been detected in humans. According to the National Institutes of Health, coronaviruses are a large family of viruses that usually cause mild to moderate upper respiratory tract illnesses like the common cold. Those who have tested positive for COVID-19 have ranged from having very mild symptoms, with some reporting no symptoms, to those severe with illnesses that result in death. Concern over the spread of COVID-19 continues to touch virtually every aspect of daily life. National, regional, and local government leaders have put unprecedented policies into effect to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19. The pandemic is affecting the global economy, throwing the world's financial markets into a period of extreme volatility and uncertainty. Governments and international organizations are planning to implement significant measures to help offset the potential economic impact of the pandemic. People are encouraged to practice something called social distancing, which Johns Hopkins University defines as a public health practice that prevents sick people from coming into close contact with healthy people to reduce opportunities for disease transmission. This means that schools are closing, with some offering online education instead of classroom education. In many parts of the world, scores of restaurants and theaters have closed their doors, with New York's Broadway dimming its lights until at least April 12th. Major sporting events have been canceled or postponed. The world's religions have been affected by the pandemic, with many closing their churches, mosques, synagogues, and temples to the public and offering online or televised editions of their religious services. Today we'll talk about COVID-19, the coronavirus that causes it, what medical science is learning about it, efforts being made to mitigate the spread of the disease, and what we may expect in the future. My co-host for today's program is VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. And our featured guest for today's program is Dr. Thomas Frieden, MD. Dr. Frieden is an infectious disease and public health physician. He is currently president and CEO of Resolve to Save Lives, an initiative that has been established to prevent epidemics and cardiovascular disease. From 2009 to 2017, Dr. Frieden served as director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia. And before that, he was commissioner of the New York City Health Department. Dr. Frieden, can you please take us back to the start of this COVID-19 crisis? How did the virus develop and then initially spread?
The best available theory now is that this emerged in China around November of last year and then spread ultimately from a bat host through some intermediate animal host, possibly or probably through what's called a wet market or a market where exotic animals are sold for food. This is the same way the SARS virus spread 17 years earlier from China. No one's certain, but what is certain is that this is unprecedented. Never before has there been a brand new virus. Influenza does this, but other than influenza, a brand new virus that has emerged in one part of the world and become a pandemic all over the world.
And yet there are people who say that this virus was manufactured in a lab and then let loose. And it's one of the rumors. How do we know that that's not true?
There are many rumors about viruses, and I feel that as with many different microbes, sunlight is the best disinfectant. getting information and making it clearly and openly available will allow that kind of rumor to be assessed. There are genetic fingerprints of the virus that, according to the virologists who know this best, suggest that this is not an engineered virus. This is a naturally occurring virus. It's very much like some that occur in nature. And this is how SARS spread in 2003. So the weight of evidence now certainly suggests that something like a wet market from a natural source is the way that this is most likely to have spread. If there are other theories or concerns or hypotheses, those should be looked at openly and transparently so that sunlight can disinfect that rumor.
I know no vaccines have been developed at this point to prevent the infection. Dr. Anthony Fauci says it may be 18 months or so before one is available for general distribution. What are your thoughts on that?
There are things that we can do right now. Every one of us needs to wash our hands more, cover our cough, not infect others if we get sick, and stop shaking hands for a while. People who are medically vulnerable, older people with underlying health conditions, where this is spreading in the community, really need to isolate themselves from others to protect themselves. Healthcare facilities need to learn to surge safely. That means improving infection prevention and control, getting ready to treat large numbers of people with just mild illness, and also getting ready in a severe situation to have to treat people who need support for breathing with ventilators or oxygen. In society as a whole, we need to think about social distancing and increasing the distance between people, canceling unnecessary meetings and other large gatherings, and making sure that we continue to learn more about this virus so we can do more about it. One thing is that we may have a treatment in the next weeks or months, and that could occur. Then it will be a question of getting it to people. Vaccine development is very challenging, and though there are promising candidate vaccines, we have no guarantee that a vaccine will become available. And if it does, it will be at least a year or two from now. So we absolutely have to do everything in our power to try to get a vaccine, but we can't depend on it. And there's no certainty that we'll have it. We don't know that there will be a safe and effective vaccine available, though we certainly hope there will be.
Dr. Frieden, you mentioned social distancing, and I understand a number of people are undergoing self-quarantine. When you're talking about both, what kind of period of time are we talking about? How long?
That's a great question. We have no idea how long this will continue. In China, they had hundreds of millions of people stay home, and they're just gradually reopening the economy and the society. Right now, they're doing such extensive work that it doesn't look like, outside of the province of Hubei where this started, it doesn't look like there's coronavirus. So there, people can go about their business carefully, and if there are clusters, try to contain them. But we don't know what will happen in the future. Anyone who tells you with confidence they know what's going to happen with this virus doesn't know enough about this virus.
There is one doctor at the University of Maryland who looked at where the coronavirus was breaking out and the temperatures of the regions where it was breaking out. And he just published a study saying that, in his opinion, according to the numbers he saw, this should mitigate. It should kind of disappear as it gets warmer in these regions. Do we know anything more about that?
We've looked at that study, and we don't find it convincing. There are hypotheses. It could be better when it gets warmer. But that's a guess. There's no evidence to support that guess. This virus is new to the world. And when we look at influenza, it behaves very differently in tropical climates from temperate climates. In tropical climates, it spreads all year round. So there's no flu season, but there's a lot of flu all year round. And if we look at other coronaviruses, other similar viruses, one of them at least has a peak both in the winter and in the summer. So only time will tell. We can hope for the best, but more importantly, we have to work for the best and we have to plan for the worst.
Any
suggestion that Africa is in some way immune to this disease, which we've seen on social media, is very dangerous because there's no evidence that that's the case. And in fact, we're beginning to see spread in Africa where they're looking for it. What is the case is that this disease is more severe among older people. And so societies that have a smaller proportion of people who are elderly may have more difficulty identifying it unless they do testing.
Why do some countries seem to have fewer reported cases than others, and how is this possible?
There are several things happening. First, this is spreading very rapidly around the world, but it's not spreading evenly. It's more in some places than in others, partly because of travel patterns and partly because of events that may allow it to spread very widely, as happened in South Korea in one community. Also, in different parts of the country, there hasn't been a lot of testing, or different parts of the world. So when we look around the United States and around the world, we see places that don't have a lot of diagnosed cases. Some of those places are looking and not finding and don't have it yet. Others of them simply aren't looking, so we don't know yet. But what's certainly the case in the United States today is that anyone with severe pneumonia should be tested for this so we can understand what's happening. We also need to really protect congregate facilities, places like nursing homes where this can spread explosively, hospitals, prisons, homeless shelters. These are all locations where a disease like this can really wreak havoc.
Dr. Frieden, you said that if you have severe pneumonia, you should be tested. But I had read that by the time you have severe pneumonia, this virus has damaged your lungs. Is that too late?
There's been a lot of confusion about the testing issue. If a community is trying to contain the virus, that is, find every single infection and stop them, then testing is very important. If a community doesn't know that coronavirus is there, then testing is very important to find out when it comes in. If someone's ill with coronavirus, it's very ill, it's important to test them so that they can be cared for safely, enrolled in clinical trials, and we can understand more about the nature of this disease. And there are very important disease detective epidemiologic investigations that need to be done in order for us to learn more about the virus so we can do more about it. But in contrast, in a community where the virus is spreading widely and it has become difficult or impossible to find all of the chains of transmission, then testing has much more limited role. And that, unfortunately, is the situation in several communities of the United States now. Early on, when it's spreading, you try to find every case. But where it starts spreading widely in a community, you have to devote your resources to doing as much good as you can, protecting people as much as you can.
I had read that some Taiwanese experts said if you do this in the morning, like take a deep breath, hold your breath for more than 10 seconds, and if you can do that without coughing, without discomfort, without stiffness or tightness in your chest, then there's no fibrosis in your lungs. And they also recommend taking a few sips of water so your mouth and throat stay moist. And because if you don't drink enough water, the virus can enter your windpipe and then get into your lungs. Would you recommend this as well?
No. There's a lot of rumor going on the internet. I think it's important that we focus on the things that we have reasonable evidence base are going to help. Wash your hands regularly. Cover your mouth and nose when you cough or sneeze, and cover it with the crook of your elbow or with a tissue that you then throw out. Don't go out if you're sick, or if you do go out and you're sick, wear a mask. Stop shaking hands. Don't go to mass gatherings. These are things that we know are likely to protect you and to protect others. If you're older, my mother is 90, and on my advice, she's taking long walks outside and watching a lot of movies and reading books, but not interacting with others, because this is spreading in the community where she lives.
Doctor, I'm curious, how long does a coronavirus infection last? How long could we, if someone's infected and is displaying symptoms of the coronavirus, how long could they expect to be under the weather from the coronavirus?
Data that we have from China and elsewhere suggests that 8 or 9 out of 10 people who get this infection will have either no symptoms or mild to moderate symptoms, and may feel nothing, or they may feel bad for as long as a few weeks. For the people with severe illness, we're seeing relatively long courses of illness. So we're seeing people get sick progressively over about 10 days, 7 to 10 days, and then stay sick for 2 or 3 weeks, and then recover very gradually. So for people for whom this is severe, it's a long struggle to deal with.
It sounds like a recovery time of pneumonia.
it is a pneumonia. It's a viral pneumonia. And when an X-ray or a CT scan is done of the lungs, it shows that viral pneumonia quite prominently. And that does take time to recover from.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Here's a reminder that Press Conference USA is available for free download from our website, voanews.com/PCUSA, and from many streaming services such as Apple Podcasts. If you have access to the Internet, please check out our Facebook and Twitter pages at Carol Castiel VOA for alerts and program updates. We will increasingly be using social media to communicate with you and to supplement our broadcasts, which will be more difficult to sustain. But make no mistake, we will go out of our way to serve you and bring you as many fresh programs, whether Press Conference USA, Encounter, or issues in the news. So please bear with us during these difficult days. Now back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Today, we're talking about COVID-19, the coronavirus that causes it, what medical science is learning about it, efforts being made to mitigate the spread of the disease, and what we may expect in the future. My co-host today is VOA health reporter Carol Pearson, and our featured guest is Dr. Thomas Frieden, MD. He is president and CEO of Resolve to Save Lives, an initiative that has been established to prevent epidemics and cardiovascular disease. Dr. Frieden previously served as director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, and as the commissioner of the New York City Health Department. Dr. Frieden, I'm curious to know how COVID-19, especially the more serious cases, is being treated in hospitals and other medical facilities.
Well, first and foremost, it needs to be treated safely. So every patient coming in with cough or fever or shortness of breath needs to be immediately isolated. And we need to ensure that healthcare workers are protected from getting infection. Second, we need to make sure that the care is as effective as possible. And right now, it's what's called supportive care, encouraging people to do whatever's possible to support the breathing of patients who have severe pneumonia. That may mean supplemental oxygen. That may mean ECMO, which is a way of oxygenating the blood, or putting someone on a ventilator. This is something which in many low and middle income countries isn't widely available. And even in the most advanced cities in the world, a bad outbreak of coronavirus could overwhelm the capacity of healthcare facilities to provide ventilator support for people who have this infection.
The U.S. is about 2 weeks behind Europe, which is the current area where it's spreading rapidly. Does the closeness of where people live in Europe, and I'm thinking of Italy, we've seen pictures of people singing from their balconies, does that have any impact on how easily the virus can spread?
What we've seen is mass gatherings being potential places where lots of people can spread this. And we still don't know a lot about the patterns of spread, but certainly when people are close together and mixing closely, there's the potential of rapid spread. That's why it's so important that people who have cough or fever not go out. And if they go out to go to the hospital, do so safely, covering their mouth and nose.
Dr. Frieden, we've been talking a little bit about, at least Carol, when you had mentioned it, the nightmarish condition in Italy. How did things get so out of hand so quickly?
One of the really striking features about coronavirus is how rapidly it moves. With colleagues, we've recently reviewed the evidence and we'll be publishing it this week on what are called super spreading events. And in those events, large numbers of people get infected in a short period of time. And what we find is that to prevent those events, you really need to act very vigorously within about 1 week in order to limit damage.
And does it help? Like in the United States, schools are closing. The federal government, for the most part, is now teleworking. Are these the sorts of things that will buy you some time?
There are certain things that certainly make sense. Teleworking, reducing mass gatherings, going to telemeetings. Schools are a much more complicated issue. And although there is irresistible pressure to close the schools, it's not necessarily going to have the same impact. This is because although children get infected with this virus, it's not known whether they spread it to others. This is different from influenza. With influenza, kids are an important source of spread of the virus in society. And if you close schools for a couple of months, you may be able to knock down the number of cases of influenza by as much as 40%. But we don't know whether that's the case here with coronavirus. And for all of these steps, what's key is to balance the projected costs, not just economic, but also societal, against the potential health benefits of taking that action. So while there are schools closing, that may not always be indicated or maximally effective to protect society. And of course, schools have many important social functions in addition to education. And when kids are out, often their parents can't work. So there are lots of things to consider with this. And it's really an estimation of cost, an estimation of benefit.
Dr. Frieden, I'm going to ask for your personal opinion here. What is your reaction to the public health response to this pandemic?
This is unprecedented. Other than influenza, which spreads each year, we've never seen a new virus emerge and then spread around the world. It has already been more disruptive than any infectious disease event since the 1918-1919 influenza pandemic. So the most disruptive infectious disease event in more than 100 years. One of the things that I wish we would do more, and I hope that we'll do more very quickly, is to learn more about how the virus spreads, whether it spreads from children and asymptomatic people, what works best to protect healthcare workers so that we can target our interventions and be as effective as possible in our response. That means that public health departments need to be in the lead on the response, figuring out what works, communicating that effectively with the public, and doing investigations so that we can learn more and do more to protect people.
Dr. Frieden, you'd mentioned the 1918 flu epidemic. Have we learned any lessons from that we're applying to this current pandemic?
There has been a lot of planning around pandemics, how to address them, how to mitigate the impact. And that's the playbook that many groups and countries are now using to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. So that planning has been very helpful. But every infectious disease is going to be different and requires a different approach. And that's why getting information as quickly as possible and using that information to protect people is so critically important.
This coronavirus, the novel one, is very similar, I understand, to the SARS coronavirus that broke out again in China some years ago. Could this possibly be just a mutation of that?
This has some relation to the SARS virus, but it's not that closely related. It's in the same family. It is not a descendant of that virus. What we know is that COVID is both more infectious and less deadly than the SARS virus. We don't know how much more infectious and how much less deadly. It's in the same family, but unlike SARS, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to stop this and make it go away forever. So we need to figure out how to manage it, how to mitigate and reduce the harms it causes, both health and societal harms.
Dr. Frieden, like COVID-19, the first reported case of SARS was reported in November in 2002. The WHO had announced that it had been contained by July 2003. Do you think world health officials will be able to contain COVID-19 within the same period? And
no,
if so,
I
when
don't.
Do you think it'll peak?
No one can predict when this will peak, but it does look like containment, that is, getting it completely out of society, may not be possible. Mm-hmm. it has spread so widely with so many chains of transmission that, unlike SARS, COVID looks like it may not be able to be contained at this point. So we're going to have to do whatever we can to reduce the impact on societies, particularly societies which have limited health services. We need to protect those health services so that we can reduce the societal harms and also reduce the risk that other core health programs will get disrupted. Children need to get vaccinated. Women need to get reproductive health care. People with chronic diseases need to get them treated. People who have car crashes and other injuries need to have them attended to. All of those things need to continue while COVID is with us.
I was talking to a doctor at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and she was saying that she would like to see, you know, testing for like 10,000 people on a random basis in a particular community, just to see, because we don't know how widespread this virus is. We don't know who has it but doesn't show symptoms, who has it but the symptoms are so mild they don't even notice. Do you think that that would be helpful at all?
There are a few epidemiologic investigations that are very much needed. One of them is to test people with what is known as influenza-like illness for COVID. There are surveillance networks for influenza-like illness in more than 100 countries around the world, and those networks need to be and are being repurposed to track for COVID. Second, people who are severely ill with hospitalization need to be tested for COVID to see if they've got it. And third, we need to do special studies that will determine things like how widely it's spreading, whether there are asymptomatic cases. However, we don't yet have a blood test for it. The only test we have for it is a throat or nasopharyngeal swab, and that test is not 100% accurate. There are false negatives. And so we need to look very carefully to see what happens here.
Dr. Frieden, we're almost out of time. Is there anything specific that you want to tell our audience about the epidemic?
This is a severe pandemic, and it's frightening. But it's important to remember that most people who get COVID will do well. 80 to 90% of those infected have mild, moderate, or no symptoms. There will be far too many people who have severe illness and tragically, too many who will die from it. And although the coronavirus pandemic will certainly get worse before it gets better, it will get better. And even in the worst of the pandemic, many people, and no one knows what proportion, won't get infected. And of those who do get infected, 99 out of 100 will recover. So it's responsible and important to be proactive now and limit the harms of COVID-19. But it's also good to keep in mind that this too will pass.
Dr. Frieden, I want to thank you so very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us and share your wonderful insights into this pandemic.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. My guest was Dr. Thomas Frieden, MD, President and CEO of Resolve to Save Lives, an initiative that has been established to prevent epidemics and cardiovascular disease. He was also the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and commissioner of the New York City Health Department. I'd like to thank my colleague and co-host for this program, VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. The science edition of Press Conference USA was produced in Washington. Our studio technician today was Evan Anechka. I'm Rick Pantaleo, thanking you once again for listening and for understanding our programming limitations due to the coronavirus. Meantime, to you, our dear listeners, please take care, stay safe, and stay healthy. And please join Carol Castiel again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.